Psachim Chaf Aleph. We are now at the end of the first parak of Psachim. After a week-long discussion regarding Inyanei Tumah Tahara, the Mishnah on Yedalid brought down the Shitas of Rabbi Chanina's Gani Kohanim and the Shitas of Rabbi Akiva and the subsequent machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi in terms of what could be gained from those positions of Rabbi Chanina's Gani Kohanim and Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara now for the last week has been discussing in detail a lot of the issues of Tumah Tahara as it relates both to the Mishnah in general, and allowed for us here in the Daf Yomi to go spend a week learning about Inyanei Tumah Tahara and give us a little bit of exposure on those topics. The Gemara in yesterday's Daf noted a couple of discrepancies that exist between the Shitas of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Three discrepancies in total that we went through in yesterday's Daf. And right now we are just finishing up the parak and finishing up the Gemara's answer on one of the discrepancies. The last discrepancy that we saw yesterday was seemingly a stira between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer as it relates to the following scenario. Truma is in the upper vat, and Truma now is going down into the pit. Found at the bottom of the pit is Chulin Tameya. So that if the Truma now makes contact and lands in the bottom of the pit with the Chulin Tameya, so you're going to end up with a problem. Notably, the Truma and the Chulin get mixed together, assuming that there is not enough to create Bittul. So what you're going to now have is Truma Tameya that can no longer be eaten. And not only that, but the Chulin, when it was just Chulin Tameya on the bottom of the pit, that in of itself would have been perfectly fine. Chulin Tameya could be eaten by anybody. But once the Truma comes in, the Truma becomes Tamei, so then you're looking at a total loss. So what do you do under those circumstances? Are you allowed to intercept the Truma before it comes down, even though the only Kalim you have available for interception are going to be Kalim that are Tameim? And am I allowed to actively intercept the Truma that's about to go down to the bottom of the pit, despite the fact that interception by definition means that I'm going to be Metame the Truma as it goes down? That was my close between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So the Gemara noted that we had the first case of the Chavishal Truma, the barrel of Truma, where it was going down, and Rabbi Eliezer says, Terid v'titam v'alitam in b'yad, Rabbi Eliezer Shita, is that one is just supposed to allow the Truma to go down to the bottom of the pit, allow it to become tummy, and you are not going to be metame b'yadayim. On the other hand, she says, Rabbi Yoshua, is that you intercept and you're metame b'yad, saving the chulin on the bottom. However, we noted a stira because that brisa that we quoted, it's actually a Mishnah, but that Mishnah, as we quoted, it was dealing with wine. The Gemara noted that we have another brisa that basically is the same scenario, but instead of wine, we're talking about oil, and there, the Shitas of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer are in agreement with one another, is that there you have to allow the oil to go to the bottom of the pit, and you cannot be metame biyadayim. What's the difference between oil and wine? And the Gemara yesterday at the end where we got to noted that the difference between oil and wine is the following. That if our Truma were to go down to the bottom of the pit and the Truma was made up of oil and the bottom of the pit is oil, so what's going to happen? So now the Truma oil is going to become Tamei. And ultimately, what's the big deal? You're going to be able to burn it. So yes, it will be a loss in that previously you were allowed to eat and now your only thing you can do is burn it. But when all is said and done, burning is still valuable. And so the loss is not going to be that significant. On the other hand, if we're talking about wine, so wine, when the wine, the Truma goes down to the bottom of the pit, and now you have all this Tamei Truma wine, so what are you going to do with the Tamei Truma wine? So you can't burn it. It's obviously can't be used as fuel. And so you're talking about a significant loss. So when you're talking about significant loss, so there, at least the Shita of Rabbi Yoshua is Yitamen Abiyad. So what you're now allowed to do is you're allowed to intercept that wine before it goes down to the bottom of the pit, so that the bottom of the pit does not become Truma Tameya, Truma and Chulin mixed together, which is Tamei, which would represent to you a significant loss. So the basic difference between wine versus oil is that if the oil becomes Tamei, it's not as significant a loss. But in the case of wine, if the wine becomes Tamei, we're talking about a significant loss. That's the difference between the cases. Now the Gemara says when it comes to wine, there is something that you could do with the wine even if it becomes Tamei. And that would be zilof. And that would be that once the wine is nice and aromatic, so you could basically use it in order to provide a good fragrance for your home. So isn't that a possibility? And if, in fact, that's a possibility, so aren't we looking at salvaging some of the financial loss? So the Gemara said that we're talking about new wine. New wine that's not aromatic. If it's new wine that's not aromatic, so I have a very simple solution, says the Gemara. And that is wait and let it become old and aromatic, and then you could use it at that point in time. The Gemara says, yeah, but while the truma is lying around waiting for it to get older and aromatic, so somebody's going to come along and drink it by accident, and we're worried about a takala. That is all as per the Gemara's response and distinction between truma oil, truma wine, both of them looking to become tameh, and what can I do in order to intervene, and the differences between tameh truma versus tameh, sorry, tameh oil versus tameh wine. All that stated, so the Gemara says, v'takala atzma tanahi, this idea that if we leave the truma tameh around and the concern that someone's going to go ahead and drink it, so the truth of the matter is, it's a machlokas tanaim, whether or not this is in fact a legitimate concern or it's not a legitimate concern. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following brisa, chavish al yain shal truma shenitmes. So here the brisa deals with a very straightforward scenario in which I have a barrel of wine, it was of truma, and it becomes tamei. Beicham armim tishapech chaval. So Beicham is of the position that you should just simply dispose of it all, pour it all down the drain. Not exactly, but in other words, dispose of it all. Obeisila armim tasa zilof, and Beisila says no. What you could do is you can make zilof of it. In other words, you could use it as a way of creating a pleasant fragrance, sprinkling around the house. So you're going to be destroying it, but at the same time destroying it, getting hana from it, as we've already established in terms of the destruction of truma tameya. So you're allowed to get benefit from it while you're destroying it. So that is shitas beisila. Am Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi ani achriyam. So Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi says, allow me to create a compromised position over here between the shitas of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. And that is, besad de tishapeh chaval. If this were to occur out in the field, so then just pour it all out. Bebaisa says zilof, but in the house you can make zilof, you can go ahead and sprinkle it around the house. Igadami, now in another version of the way Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi says his compromised position, and that is bechadash, if it's new wine, tishapeh chaval. So then you have to pour it all down the drain. However, be yasham, but if it's old wine, ta says zilof, then you can make zilof. So amru lo, so they say to him, meaning, so Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi thinks now what he's doing is he's creating some sort of compromise position between the shitas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. They say to him, ein achra shlishi machras. What you're doing over here is that you're not presenting a compromise position, but rather you're an original opinion. Your position is an original idea. So Rashi over here points out, as we pointed out before, the idea of a compromise position is where there are two disputants, each one of them acknowledging that there's a particular variable, and each position is taking a hardline approach. In other words, one position says, I don't care if it's this variable or that variable, and the other one says, I don't care if it's this variable or that variable, but clearly each of the positions is acknowledging the variable, and along comes the third party and says, well, in this scenario, in this variable, we're going to fall like him, and then that variable going to fall like that. So that's going to be a compromised position, and that's where we split the difference. However, here in the Brisa, the Shitas of Beis Shammai, the Shitas of Beis Hillel, they're not taking either of these variables into account. In other words, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, when they're arguing their positions, they're not making any distinction, or they're not even contemplating a distinction between home versus field, or new wine versus old wine. So clearly, the way Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are presenting their argument, this is literally nothing to do with Takala. They're not worried about it lying around and it, the Truma, being possibly consumed by an unsuspecting Kohen, not realizing that it was in fact Tameh. And then along comes Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, and he goes ahead and he brings about this distinction about whether it's in the field versus home, whether it's new versus old. Obviously, he's thinking about Takala, but Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel are not thinking about Takala. So the two points to be made over here. Number one, that's why the Gemara says this is not considered a compromised position, because Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel are not even contemplating Takala. What's the issue between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel? They're obviously arguing over a different issue. But clearly over here, they're not being guided by Takala, as opposed to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. So he is worried about Takala. He thinks that's the issue between the two, between Beit Shammai versus Beis Hillel. Good. So what comes out now from all this is that the machlok is between Beit Shammai Beis Hillel versus Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi is whether or not we're concerned about Takala or we're not concerned about Takala. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi clearly is of the position that we are worried about Takala, and whoever is representing the Tanakama of that Braisa espousing the viewpoints of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel clearly are not worrying about Tekala. So that's where the Gemara says that whether or not we're concerned about Tekala, we're not concerned about Tekala, is a machlokis Tanayim, notably the Tana espousing Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel versus the positions of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi. Good. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Now, the Gemara is going to make one more point as we go back and just quickly review the machlokis between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yoshua. So you recall in the case where you have the wine in the upper vat, and now the barrel breaks, and the wine now is headed down into the lower pit. That lower pit has chulin tamea, so can you intercept? So as we already spent a couple of times going over this machlokas, Rabbi Lazar says you cannot intercept. Rabbi Yeshua says that you are allowed to intercept. And the svar behind Rabbi Yeshua is because if you don't intercept, so what's going to happen now is that truma is going to go down to the bottom of the pit, come into contact with the chulin tamea, get mixed with the chulin tamea. Now you're going to have wine which is perfectly unusable. Nobody can use the wine at that point in time. You're looking at a significant hefsed, and so therefore, if you can intercept and prevent, even though what you are going to lose now is that by intercepting, the only kalim that you have are tamei kalim, and you're going to be metame the shuma biyadayim, but still, according to Rabbi Yeshua, better that should happen rather than have all that chulin go to waste. Good. So that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, which we already saw in the Mishnah and Trumos. With that stated, the Gemara now is going to qualify that machlokes. That's what we're doing right now on the top of Chafalaf Amad Aleph. I'm a Rabbi Yossi. Be Rabbi Chanina machlokes nafla pachos mimea sa'a chulin tamein. The only time that we're having a debate between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer is only if the Truma wine that's going to go down into the pit is going to be meeting the chulin, but the ratio of the chulin on the bottom is less than 100 to 1. Aval nafla lameya chulin tamei and divrei hakol teri v'titamei ve'al yitamenu biyad. However, if the chulin on the bottom of the pit is going to be at a ratio of 100 times greater than the truma coming in, so at that point in time, what's going to happen? We're going to have bittul, and since we're going to have bittul, so therefore it's not going to be a loss. Meaning we're not going to lose all that chulin on the bottom of the pit because 100 to 1 is the proper ratio in order to affect bittul between truma and chulin. Tanyanami Halchi, the Gemara says, now we have a brisa supporting this as well. And the brisa says, Chavisha Nishbaro Begasal Yona, you have the barrel of wine that breaks in the upper vat, Vitachteha Mea Chulin Temein, and below now in the pit just below you have 100 times of Chulin Temea, Mode Rabbi Eliezer, Li Rabbi Yoshua, Shim Yachal Hatzel Mimena Revias Betar Yatzel. Now, if I can salvage just a base minimum of the truma, as we already established, is going to be a revius of the truma, that's great. The imlav, however, if you're not going to be able to salvage any of the truma in a state of tahara, so now what do you do? Ter vititama valutam in a biyad. So now what you have to do is you have to let the truma go down into the bottom of the pit. It's going to become tame, but it's not that big a problem because you have 100 times chulin versus the truma that's going to go in. You have effective bittul, and so therefore there is not going to be a problem of the financial loss because bittul will in fact occur, and all that wine that's in the bottom of the pit now is going to be usable. Okay, good. So and this brisa clearly is a support for Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, who significantly qualifies the machlokus of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, that in this particular case, there is not going to be a debate between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Good. So the Gemara over here is just bothered by one detail, and that is the way the Brisa presents it, the Brisa that we just saw together, the Brisa presents it as if, not as if, but the Brisa actually says that Mode Rabbi Eliezer li Rabbi Yoshua. Hi, Mode Rabbi Eliezer li Rabbi Yoshua. Mode Rabbi Yoshua li Rabbi Eliezer mi baile. Well, let's consider. Of the two positions that we saw in the Mishnah, between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, so who normally says that you can intercept? So Rabbi Yeshua says you can intercept. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you can't intercept. You must let the wine go down to the bottom of the pit. So now, in this scenario, so who's going to be moded to whom? What you would expect the Brisa to say is that Rabbi Yeshua is going to be moded to Rabbi Eliezer, meaning Rabbi Yeshua, who normally says you're allowed to intercept, over here says that you won't be allowed to intercept. So that's what we would expect the Brisa to say. The Brisa does confuse us because the Brisa says that Rabbi Eliezer is moded to Rabbi Yoshua. That's exactly the opposite as what we would have expected the Brisa to say. So I'm a Rava Epoch. So Rava's response is that, look, yeah, the Brisa is unedited, and the Brisa could use a little bit of editing. So what we're going to do is we're going to edit the Brisa. Okay, good. That's one approach. But the Gemara gives a second approach. Rav Huna Breid, Rav Yeshua Amar, Lo'olam Lo Tepach. No, don't edit the Brisa. The Brisa, keep the Brisa as it is. We're going to say a pshat in the Brisa as it stands. And Hacha B'mayiskin B'klisha Tocha Tar V'gabotamei. So over here, we're not talking about the scenario in which you can't salvage any of the Truma Tahara. Actually, the Brisa's comment over here, the end of that Brisa is talking about where you can salvage Truma Tahara. Now remember, the Brisa says, if that as long as I can salvage a base minimum amount of the Truma Tahara, meaning I can get my hands on some Kli Tahor in order to salvage just a revius of the Truma Tahara, so that's what you have to do. You have to salvage some of the Truma Tahara. Good. It's on that now that we are saying that Rabbi Eliezer agrees to Rabbi Yoshua. Now, over there, what's the issue? Meaning, of course, if I could salvage some of the Truma Tahara, so we've already established that there's agreement. What's the Chiddush over here? Gemara goes on to explain. So over here, we're talking about a very specific case. We're talking about a very specific kli that has an unusual status of tuma. Notably, the exterior is tuma and the interior is tahor. I'm going to explain that better in just a moment. But right now, that's the kind of kli that we're talking about. So now, this is the only kli that I have to salvage the truma tahora. Now over here, right, keep in mind, interior is tahor, exterior is tameh. Ma'od etamah, the Gemara says, look, you could have had a very legitimate havamina, which is negzer dama nagaba gabo betruma. Look, I'm trying to save some of the truma tahora, obviously in a state of tahara. And now I'm going to collect it in this kli. Well, this kli, the only part of it that's tahara is only the interior, not the exterior. What could easily happen is that the wine is going to come into contact with some of the exterior of this kli, and then the wine is going to become tamei, and then your whole mission of salvaging some of the truma b'tahara is going to be lost. So one can only imagine that in such a scenario, the chachamim would say this is not a good idea. Don't salvage it in such a kli. So the Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is no, that even in such a kli you can salvage it. And that's the Pshat in the Braisa. When the Braisa says that Rabbi Eliezer would agree to Rabbi Yoshua, that even though you do run somewhat of risk over here, but over here the risk is worth taking. Okay, what are we talking about? The kli's tummy on the outside but not the inside? What kind of kli are we talking about? So this goes back to a point that we made earlier. This is not talking about tuma on a Deraisa level. This is talking about tuma on a Derabanan level. Again, just as a quick reminder, on a Deraisa level, tuma is all or nothing. By the way, it's true by people as well. A person becomes tummy. Min ha-Torah, either the entire person becomes tameh, or none of the person becomes tameh. There is no such entity min ha-Torah where only part of the person becomes tameh. Ah, yadayim, right? Our hands are tameh, and the rest of our body are tahor. That's a din derabanan. That's a tuma derabanan. But mid ha-Raisa, it's all or nothing. Same thing is true with kelim. Min ha-Torah, it's all or nothing. Either the entire kli is tahor, or the entire kli is tameh. We don't have a distinction. Now, yes, it's true, right? I'm editing myself. Yes, it's true that by kli cheres, so kli cheres is only metame from the interior, but once the kli cheres becomes tame, then the entire kli cheres becomes tame. But in terms of the kli itself, we don't have in a Torah part of the kli being tame and part of the kli being tahor. Aye. So then what are we talking about? We're talking about a din derabanan. What din derabanan? Notably, the din derabanan, where a mashke comes into contact with a kli, midaraisa, the kli is tahor, but midarabanan, the kli becomes tameh. Ah, why should that be? So as we already pointed out, it's a gezerah that was enacted because of the mayanos, because of the secretions of a zav, which are in fact an avatoma. So therefore, the chachamim goes there that any liquid that comes into contact with a kli is going to be metame the kli. Ah, and we've gone over this halacha numerous times, but we get to review. If the mashke comes into contact with the interior of the kli, the whole kli becomes tameh, both interior and exterior. If the mashke becomes into contact with the exterior of the kli, so only the exterior becomes tameh, but the interior remains tahor. Why? The Chachamim did that intentionally so that people will remind each other that this is anomalous, this is strange, and that this is only a tumah derabanan and not a tumah deraisa. Meaning what the Chachamim did is that they put in an anomaly into the legislation so that people would realize that this is only a tumah derabanan, not a tumah deraisa. It has nafkaminas, it has practical applications in terms of why that's important, significant. Anyway, with that stated, so now we've identified what exactly the case would be in which you would have a kli which is tumah on the interior but not the exterior. And so now with that kli in mind, So now you're trying to salvage some of the Truma Tahara. So the Gemara says that one could have significantly entertained the idea that using this kind of kli is not a good idea. And the Chiddush is that, no, you're allowed to do it. Even Rabbi Eliezer would agree to Rabbi Yeshua that you could use such a kli. Hadralach or La'arba Asar. And so concludes the end of the first parak of Pesachim. And now we have the schus of starting the second parak of Pesachim, the Mishnah. Kol shah shemot alechol ma'achil lebehema lechaya ula ofos. So every hour that you're allowed to eat truma, you can also go ahead and feed it to your animals, both domesticated, wild, and also birds as well. Umachol anachri, during this hour, you could sell it to a non-Jew. Umutter behan also, and you can get benefit from it during this hour. Avraz mano, but once the hour has passed, aser behan also, so then you cannot get benefit from it. V'lo yasik botan v'kiraim, you cannot use the chametz while burning it to go ahead and to heat up an oven. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in bir chametz alasrefer, shitas Rabbi Yehuda, is that you can only burn chametz in terms of how to destroy it. V'chachamim amen, the chachamim say, af mefar v'zara l'ruach omat aliyam. You can crumble it up, you can throw it into the wind, you can throw it into the ocean, meaning any way of eliminating the chametz would be a valid way of elimination, of fulfilling the mitzvah of bir chametz. Okay. What the Mishnah here is clearly doing is reintroducing us to the idea that on Erev Pesach, so there's going to be a point in time where we're no longer allowed to eat chametz. Again, just as a brief background to the Mishnah, I should have given the introduction before we started the Mishnah, but okay, it's not too late. As a brief introduction to the Mishnah, so we all know. We remember we already established back on Daf Hei here in Pesachim that on Erev Pesach, chametz is asur min ha-Torah from Chatzos and onward. Midrabanan, however, the Chachamim who were concerned that people are not going to be able to pinpoint exactly when Chatzos is, so the Chachamim backed it up an hour, 2 hours. As we already noted, a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in terms of how far back on Erev Pesach before Chatzos did the Chachamim give us an Isser not to eat chametz, not to benefit from chametz. We're going to go over those shitas in just a moment. Shitas of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, we're going to go over them again. The Mishnah over here is telling us that when you have an hour in the morning where you're allowed to eat chametz, you can be machal behema, you can feed it to your animal. So the Mishnah over here presents itself as a bit of a mystery, because clearly in the Mishnah is referring to a particular hour, but the Mishnah, of course, does not identify which hour it is. Okay, so the first thing we're going to establish in the Gemara is which hour of the Mishnah is describing. And in doing so, also what we're going to have to establish is which Tana is the Mishnah subscribing to. All that is going to be discussed in the Gemara that we're going to start in just a moment. Second half of the Mishnah is talking about how to destroy chametz. Meaning, once we know that there's a mitzvah of bir chametz, so how exactly do you go about in destroying chametz? So that is a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of our mission. Rabbi Yehuda says with Sreifa, and the Chachamim say you can destroy it in any manner. The Gemara later, not in today's daf, but the Gemara later is going to go over the various Makoros in terms of the Shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Shitas of the Chachamim. We are going to come back to that. In the meantime, however, let's deal now with the first basic issue of our Mishnah, and that is which hours our Mishnah describing and which position is the Mishnah making reference to. The Gemara starts off. Kol shah shemot alechol machil. Any hour in which you're allowed to eat, you can feed it to your animals. You can feed the chametz to your animals. Ha kol shah sheino motor lechol eino machil. Now, the obvious implication of the first line of the Mishnah is, if it's an hour where I'm not allowed to eat, I'm not allowed to feed it. Now, feeding over here is hana. So effectively, what the Mishnah seems to be saying is that once there's an isra achila, there's also going to be an isra hana. So lema masisin deloka Rabbi Yehuda. Now, here's what it sounds like. Sounds like our Mishnah is not going like Shitas Rav Yehuda. Now, already earlier in this, in the Masechta, on Daf Dalet, on Daf Yad Aleph, so we saw the Shita Rav Yehuda. The E Rav Yehuda, because the Shita Rav Yehuda is Ha'ika Chamesh, the fifth hour according to Rav Yehuda. Now, on a perfect day, where the day starts at 6 a.m. and ends at 6 p.m., I'm just using this as an illustration, as just a sound example of what we're describing over here. So that means to say that noon obviously is going to be 12 o'clock. So each hour is going to be made up of 60 minutes. Obviously, the halachic days are not this perfect, and it's going to obviously fluctuate depending on when sunrise is, when sunset is, and that also is an oversimplification. Not everyone counts the beginning and the end of the day at sunrise, sunset. But anyway, regardless, We're going to keep everything simple over here, streamline the whole discussion, assuming that we're dealing with a perfect day where the day starts at 6 a.m., ends at 6 p.m. So now, we're describing over here the fifth hour. What is the fifth hour? The fifth hour is from 10 to 11, right, on this perfect day. So during the fifth hour, so what's the halacha according to Rabbi Yehuda? So it sounds like our mission is not subscribing to Rabbi Yehuda. How do I know that? The E Rabbi Yehuda Ika Chamesh Ein Ochel Machil, where according to Rabbi Yehuda, during this fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat chametz, but you're allowed to get benefit from chametz during this fifth hour. Ditnan, and the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer, Ochlin Kol Chamesh V'Sorfin B'Tchel Shesh. Shitas Rabbi Meir is that you're allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour, and then you burn at the beginning of the sixth hour. Meaning, according to Shitas Rabbi Meir, so you can eat chametz from 10 to 11, and then at the beginning of the sixth hour, meaning 11:01, so that's when you burn your chametz. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ochlin Kol Arba V'Tolin Kol Chamesh V'Sorfin B'Tchel Shesh. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that you are going to be able to eat chametz, but only during the fourth hour. So that's going to be from 9 to 10. Then, obviously, before 9 as well, you're allowed to eat chametz. Then from 10 to 11. So now the chametz is in the state of suspension. You cannot eat the chametz, but you're allowed to get benefit during that hour. And then, B'tchel Shesh, in the beginning of the sixth hour, meaning 11:01, so you're going to be burning chametz. So Rami and Rabbi Yehuda are both in agreement. When is the Zman Beer? That's going to be the beginning of the sixth hour. 11:01 is the Zman Beer. But what they disagree about is what it's going to be during the fifth hour. According to Shitas Rabbi Meir, so you can eat the chametz and certainly you can get benefit from it. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you are prohibited from eating the chametz, but you are allowed to get benefit from it. So now when our Mishnah says that the hour in which you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to get benefit, so it sounds like our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, during the fifth hour, you can't eat, but you can get benefit. And that's not our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Velamai Reb Meir. So the Gemara says, okay, so then, process of elimination. Our Mishnah sounds like Reb Meir, right? So, hi, kol sha shemut alechol machil, kol sha sheochel machil mibayle. So the Gemara says, okay, but the wording of the Mishnah then becomes really difficult. Because our Mishnah says, kol sha shemut alechol machil. If our Mishnah is just simply espousing the viewpoint of Reb Meir, so the lush on the Mishnah should be, kol sha sheochel machil, a really simple formula in which we're describing the same person. If said person can eat chametz, said person can also feed it to his animals, i.e., get hana from it. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, kol shasha mutar le'echol, which the implication would be that during the hour where somebody else can eat it, so you can get benefit from it. Well, what is that a reference to? So the Gemara now says, fine. So our Mishnah is clearly not going like Rabbi Yehuda. And because of this textual problem that we just raised, our Mishnah is also not going like Rabbi Meir. So what are we left with? So Amar Rav Bar Ula, hopefully this is familiar because we discussed this back in the first parak. And this is good chazara. So Amar Rav Bar Ula, Masisim Rabbi Gamliel Hi. Our Mishnah is going like Shitas Rabbi Gamliel. Did not we learn? Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Chulin Echal and Kolarba, Chumachol Chamesh Vesorfim B'tchel Sheish. So Shitas Rabbi Gamliel is that in principle, he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. The last time you can eat chametz is during that fourth hour, from 9 to 10. It's just that Rabbi Gamliel has the following, and that is, Rabbi Gamliel says that during the fifth hour, from 10 to 11, so even though Klal Yisrael cannot eat their chametz, but the Kohanim are allowed to eat the Trumas chametz during that fifth hour. Meaning the Kohanim are extended, given one extended hour in which they can eat their chametz. Presumably it's based on the fact that the Truma has Kedusha, Truma should not be disposed of. Truma, if possible, could be eaten. And so therefore, Shitas Rabbi Gamliel is that the Kohanim are afforded one additional hour in which they can go ahead and finish their Truma. So, now we're going to say good pshat in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, V'hachi kamar, kol sha shemot alechol, kohen b'truma, Yisrael machil chulin lebehema, l'chaya ula ofos. Or, Yisrael, let's stop, Yisrael machil and chulin, period. So now, so we're saying a wonderful pshat in our Mishnah. That kol sha shemut alechol is a reference to the Kohanim. So when the Kohanim are allowed to eat their truma, i.e. during the fifth hour, so the rest of Klal Yisrael with their chulin, so they are not allowed to eat their chulin chametz, but what they're allowed to do is that they're allowed to get hana, i.e. they're allowed to feed it to their animals, or do any of the other activities mentioned in the Mishnah, sell it to a goy, etc., etc. Good. So our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Gamliel. If you remember, Tosfos earlier asked the question, if our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Gamliel, doesn't that mean that we have a Stam Mishnah that goes like Rabbi Gamliel? Good, Tosos dealt with that earlier in the Masechta. Anyway, we're going to go back to our Mishnah now, and we're going to be tackling some of the some of the textual issues that are found in our Mishnah. So, what are you going to be doing during the fifth hour with this chametz? So, ma'achilin, you're going to be feeding it. But the Mishnah is very specific about who you're going to be feeding it to. So, lebehema, lechaya, ulaofos, lamali, lemisna, behema, lamali, lemisna, chaya. Why does the Mishnah say you're going to be feeding it to behema and chaya? It seems to be a bit of a redundancy. The Mishnah could just simply say, I'm feeding it to animals during the fifth hour. That seemingly would be sufficient. So, chaya and behema, right? It seems to be extra. So, Tzricha, the Gemara says, no, it's necessary. De'itan behema, de'imashari chazila. When it comes to behema, so when a behema, sometimes they're going to leave something over. And so, therefore, chazila, they're going to leave it over and it's going to be fit. And the problem, of course, is that that's just simply chametz lying around. However, when it comes to avachaya, de'imashari kamatznila, but when it comes to a chaya, what's going to happen is that they don't leave anything over. Meaning the nature of the chaya is that after they finish, if there's anything to be left over, they're going to hide it. And that's going to present a problem. So the Gemara says, aim alone. So I might have thought that under those circumstances, I shouldn't be feeding it to the chaya because they're going to leave over and it's not readily in front of me. And so therefore, I'm going to be in violation of Bayer Rabbi Yamase. And the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, we can actually go in the other direction. That if the Mishnah only said that I could feed a chaya, so I would have said, great, because whatever they leave over, they're going to hide. But when it comes to the domesticated animals, so they're not going to finish the whole thing, they're going to leave it around, and because they're leaving it around, so you now are not going to be, you're going to be busy, you're going to be too busy to simply pick up after them, and you're going to be in violation of Bayura Bayamase as you leave the chametz unattended and leave it around over the course of Pesach. Okay. So that's why the Mishnah has to include both Behema and Chaya. Now, the Gemara says, good. So, sorry, Malot Tzricha. Ofos Lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, but then the inclusion of birds, why is that necessary in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Idi Tani Behema, V'chaya Tani Nami Ofos. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. When it comes to birds, the reason of the inclusion is just simply because that happens to be a standard formula of the Mishnah. Behema, Chaya, V'ofos. So once you have Behema, once you have Chayas, so then we're just going to basically default into the standard formula. Oh, we could sell it to a non-Jew. Okay, we made this point before, but let's just quickly reiterate the point. The Minhag Yisrael is that we sell our chametz to a non-Jew before Pesach, and thereby circumventing the Yisurim of Bal Yerah Bal Yamasev of not owning it. We mentioned this already numerous times, but let's repeat it because now is a really appropriate time to do so. And that is that there is no reference in Chas, in Talmud Bavli, to this idea that as a way of evading the Isra Bal Yerah Bal Yamasev, so you should sell it to the non-Jew. In other words, we're going to be discussing here in our Mishnah the allowance to sell to a Jew during the fifth hour. That's not the Heter Mechira that we employ. It just, the Mishnah is just simply describing that because it's the fifth hour and because you're allowed to get benefit from it, so one of the things that you're allowed to do is sell it to a non-Jew. The Mishnah in no way is describing what we do, which is you're going to sell it to the non-Jew and then you're going to buy it back from him. The Mishnah is just simply giving an example of something you could do during that fifth hour. So what are we doing in terms of selling it to a non-Jew? So what we're doing is that we sell it to the non-Jew, but with the understanding that we're going to buy it back from them. And it is a old and detailed discussion in terms of whether this is harama, whether this is deception, whether it's allowed, whether it's not allowed, under what circumstances allowed, what's the history of sale. So this is a lengthy discussion, but I just want to be clear at this point in time, that's not what our Mishnah is describing over here. Our Mishnah is just simply giving an allowance to sell to a non-Jew during the fifth hour, because one is allowed to get benefit from it during the fifth hour. That's all our Mishnah is doing. The Gemara says, Pshita, the Gemara says, it's obvious that you're allowed to sell to a non-Jew, meaning at this point in time, we've established that it's Mutar Ba'anah. So what is our Mishnah telling us that we don't already know? La'fukamei Tana. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there is a Tana, and there's a Braisa where we're about to go through, and our Mishnah wants to make sure that we know that we totally reject this Braisa. What Braisa are we making reference to? The Tanya we learned in the Braisa b'Shamay Armim Lo Yimkor Adam Chemtzel Anachri Ela Imken Yodea Bo Sheichala Kodin Pesach Shitas b'Shamay. Super interesting Shita b'Shamay, and that is that you could sell chametz to a goy, but only if you know that it's going to be consumed and conclude and finished by the time Pesach rolls around. Beisela Armim Kol Shasha Mutalecha Mutalemkor, and Shitas Beisela is that no, you could sell to a goy right before the Zman Isser, as long as you're allowed to get benefit from it, meaning the fifth hour on Erev Pesach, and of course, any time beforehand. So at that point in time, you're allowed to sell it to the Goy, even though the Chametz is still going to be in the world, but it's no longer owned by you. And then, as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Kutach v'chol minei kutach asa limkor shloshim yom kodem l'Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that when it comes to the kutach, that's our famous Babylonian cheese dip, as one of the ingredients is Chametz in this cheese dip. So you have to sell that 30 days prior to Pesach. Rashi over here, an explanation, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that the Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is subscribing to Shitas Beit Shammai, that really the Chametz has to be destroyed before Pesach rolls around. Even when you sell it to a non-Jew, still has to be destroyed before Pesach rolls around. And so this Kutach, which lasts for a while, so therefore you have to go about and sell it 30 days prior to Pesach. Okay, it is unusual that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is adopting a position that follows Shitas Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai's position is normally rejected. You can see Tosfos on the top of the Amud that offers a different shot altogether within the Shita of Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, and that he's not subscribing to the Shita of Beis Shammai, but rather Beis Hillel. You can see Tosfos that discusses it in some detail. Anyway, Shita's Beis Shammai, just spend another moment analyzing Shita of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says that even if I sell it to a non-Jew, still it has to be consumed prior to Pesach. What's the svar behind that shita? Take a look at Rashi, the Bam Rashi in the Amud. Kodem shiavo haPesach deKasavre mitzvah alav leva'aro min haolam v'lo sheikayim. Shita's Beis Shammai is that what's the mitzvah of bir chametz? Bir chametz is not just simply losing ownership of the chametz, but totally destroying it from the world. And that means to say that when you have chametz that was owned by a Jew prior to Pesach, so the mitzvah according to Beis Shammai is understood by Beis Shammai is that there has to be full eradication of that chametz. It can't be extant anymore. Now that obviously represents a tremendous chiddush, and obviously we don't paskin like that, but that is Rashi's understanding of Shitas Beis Shammai. Okay. We are now on the top of Chafal of Amud Beis. We're continuing our picking apart the Mishnah, line by line, phrase by phrase. Mutar ba'anah. The Mishnah says you're allowed to get benefit during the fifth hour. Now, if you look carefully at the Mishnah, at this point in time, the point has already been hammered home. The Mishnah says, Kol shasha mutar lechol ma'achil. So during the hour, the fifth hour, as we have already established, where the Kohanim are allowed to eat their truma, so you're allowed to feed it to your animals, whether it's behema chayiv ha'ofos. The Mishnah says you could sell it to a non-Jew. And then the Mishnah says you're allowed to get benefit from it. Okay, at that point in time, it is so obvious that you're allowed to get benefit from it, pshita. So what's exactly the chiddush of the Mishnah at that point in time? Lotzricha shecharcho kodem zmano. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the chiddush of the Mishnah, and that is that it was singed, more than singed, it was burnt. The chametz was burnt to a crisp, and the chiddush goes as follows. So the kamash malan kiddurava damarava, charcho kodem zmano, motor ba'na afil achar zmano. If the chametz was burnt to a crisp before the zman, so then it's no longer considered chametz, and you're allowed to get benefit from it even after the zman. Now, as far as Rav is concerned, there's a lot of details that need clarification for the Daf Yomi. Just going to raise the issues. I'm not going to do it with any kind of depth, but he says it has to be burnt. What degree has it to be burnt to? Burnt to a crisp where it's not edible at all. Burnt to a crisp where it's not edible by humans but edible by dogs. Okay, so that needs clarification. And also, he says that once it's burnt before Zman, so then you're allowed to get Hana from it after Zman. Hana meaning what? Meaning that you can get benefit from it. You can actually eat it afterwards as well. So presumably the former, not the latter. Anyway, there's a lot of issues that need to be resolved within the Sheet of Rava. But just to make the point of the Gemara, that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that it's Mutar B'Hana, is that the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that as long as it was burnt before the Zman, so then, even if it's around, even after the Zman, so you still include it in the Heter Hana. Avazmano Asabah Naso. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that once the hour has passed, so then it's Asabah Na Pshita. So Rashi has a bit of a discussion over here whether the word Pshita belongs here. It doesn't belong here, but anyway. So Lo Tzricha L'Shaos the Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is as follows. That when does it become Asabah Na? It becomes Asabah Na during the 6 hour, meaning from 11 to 12. Even though min haTorah, it's not yet Aser min haTorah before noon, But nevertheless, from that 11 to 12, during that 6 hour, so now that's a Shad Rabbanan, it's a rabbinic hour, but nevertheless, the Isser Hana'a is going to be an absolute Isser. Amar of Gidal Amar of Chiyar Bar Yosef, Amar, Rabbi Yochanan, Mekadosh Mishay Shalz Velamala, Afila Bechite Kur De Naisa, Ein Choshishin Likidushin. If a man attempts to be Mekadosh a woman during the 6 hour, using wheat, presumably the wheat over here has already been converted into chametz, using the wheat. Rashi over here says that we're using the example of chite kordanaisa because it's very hard and it doesn't make chametz that particularly easily. Nevertheless, the point is that since we're talking about something which is easily or even not so easily convertible into chametz, and since the chachamim asserted it at this point in time, and even though the isser is an isser de rabbanan, nevertheless, if a man were to attempt to be mekadesh it during this point in time, the kedushin is not chal, despite the fact that mina Torah it's mutar bahana, but nevertheless the isser de rabbanan is going to kick in and block the kedushin from occurring. So how exactly does that happen? How is the kedushin going to be blocked? So we already went over this earlier back on Daf Zion, and Rashi over there says that this is a function of called the mekadesh adaita de rabbanan mekadesh. That when a man is mekadesh a woman, he's doing so only with the consent of the chachamim. If for whatever reason, like this one over here, where it's the 6 hour on Erev Pesach and you're using chametz, if for whatever reason the chachamim are not consent to the kiddushin, so then the chachamim can go ahead and revoke the kiddushin. Presumably, it's a function of hefker based on hefker, but for our purposes right now, suffice to say that the Chachamim have that kind of power. That's the Chiddush HaMishnah. The Chiddush HaMishnah is that even though it's the 6 hour, and even though the Isser de Rabbanan is, the Isser Hana is only an Isser de Rabbanan, nevertheless, the Chachamim can block the Kedushin even at that point in time. V'lo yasik bo tanu v'kirayim, next point of the Mishnah, and that is that you're not allowed to use it to heat up your ovens. The earthenware ovens that were fired up in order so that they become hard and usable. So you cannot use the burning of the chametz as an opportunity to go ahead and fire up your ovens. So Pshita, the Gemara says, now it seems to be obvious. L'tzricha li Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's not so obvious, because it could be going according to Shita's Reb Yehuda. Damer ein bir chametz ela sreifa. Shita's Reb Yehuda is that bir chametz is only going to be done via sreifa. So saka dat chaimina hol v'amer Reb Yehuda mitzvah b'sreifa. So look, Reb Yehuda says that you must do a b'sreifa. So I might suggest the following. Good. Look, once we have to be burning it anyway, so look, I'm doing the mitzvah of burning the chametz, so can't we also get some sort of side benefit while burning the chametz? That's the Havamin mean of the Gemara. And the maskan of the Gemara is no, you can't. Meaning, even according to Shita's Rav Yehuda, you cannot get a side benefit while performing the mitzvah of beer chametz, even though the only way to successfully do the mitzvah of beer is only through actual beer, only through burning. Amar Chizkia. Yeah. The Gemara now is going to be starting off a basic discussion. I'll just introduce the Gemara right now. I'll introduce the two main positions, and really tomorrow what we're going to do is we're going to pick up halfway down on the Amud and go over the positions and the source of the sheet is very clearly. The issue over here, this is a very fundamental sugya, the quote unquote the big sugya of the second parak of Psachim, and that is it's a very simple question. How do I know the chametz on Pesach is aser bihana? The Torah is very clear to point out that achilas chametz on Pesach is an isser Torah. In fact, it comes with it a onish of kares. But in terms of the isser hana'a, that one cannot get benefit from chametz on Pesach, so where is that generated from? Where in the Torah do we know that the chametz has with it not only an isser achila, but an isser hana'a as well? So that is the discussion that we are about to begin. Let's at least introduce ourselves to the participants of the machlokas, and then tomorrow we'll go with the makaros. Amar Chizkia, minan lechametz bepesach she'aser b'hana'a. How do I know the chametz bepesach is aser? Explains Shitas Chizkia. Shenemar, the pasuk says, lo ye'achel chametz. The Torah, when introducing us to the isser of chametz, says that chametz is not to be eaten. It's in the passive, which means lo ye'bo heter achila. You cannot even have a heter achila as well. How's that generated from the word ye'achel? Rashi explains that the word in the Torah is pronounced We have a Masorah of how it's pronounced. It's pronounced Ye'echel, which means not only you're not allowed to eat it, but it cannot be the cause of the eating of chametz. Meaning, if we were allowed to get hana from this chametz, what could we do with it so we can get benefit from it? Convert it into money. And what are we going to do with the money? Says Rashi, we're going to buy chametz with it. So this chametz can not only not be eaten, but not be the cause of the eating of other chametz, i.e., it's also behana. That's Shitas Chizkiyah. So time to Kasa Rechman Lo Yachel Chametz, and the Gemara makes the point very clear that according to Shitas Chizkiyah, it's because the Torah said Lo Yachel. Ha Lo Kasav Lo Yachel, if the Torah had not said Lo Yachel, but rather the Torah would have just said it in the standard construct of Lo Yochal, Havamina Isra Chila Mashma Isra Anala Mashma. So then, what would have come out from there is that there would only be Nisra Achila, not Nisra Na. Upligi de Rabbi Abau. Now this goes against the Shita Rabbi Abau. Dam Rabbi Abau. Kol Makum Shenemar Lo Yochal, Lo Sochal, Lo Sochlu. Anytime the Torah introduces us to an Isra of Achila, Echad Isra Achila, Echad Isra Na, Bimashma, Ashi Parlacha Kasav, Kedar Shaparlacha Benevela. Unless the Torah goes out of its way to say that it's only Asur Be'achila and it's not Asur Be'ana, just like the Torah did regarding Nevela. Good? So that means to say that according to Rabbi Abahu, the default setting of the Torah, anytime the Torah introduces us to an Isra Achila, is that included in the Isra Achila is also an Isra Ana as well. And what we're going to be doing, starting tomorrow, is that we're going to be going through this machlokas between Chizki and Rabbi Abahu in great detail. Obviously, the Gemara wants to know. This just can't be a machlokas in terms of lamdus. So it has to be nafka minas as well. The Gemara is going to be spending a good amount of time trying to find what the nafka mina may be between the shitas of Chizki and Rabbi Abahu. Okay. And this is a major sugya here in the second parak of Pesachim regarding how do I know about the Isser Hana by Chametz on Pesach. And it's going to touch on some of the more basic issues regarding Isser Hana in general. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Let's quickly recap. The beginning of the staff, we had the schus of finishing the first parak of Pesachim, a little more discussion to Matahara. We established that whether or not leaving Truma Tamei around the house and being concerned that someone is going to absentmindedly eat it while it's around the house and it's Truma Tamei and no one's allowed to eat it, and whether or not this should be a legitimate concern. So it turns out to be a machlokas tanaim. We saw that on the bottom of Chafam and Beis. On the top of Chaf Aleph of the Gemara, went over the machlokas of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, vis-a-vis the scenario of the wine, truma wine, that's falling down into the pit, and in this pit you have chulin tamea, and whether or not you can intercept or whether you cannot intercept. So the Gemara limits the machlokas to a case where there be no bittel, but if in a case where there's bittel, meaning to say that there is a substantial amount of truma on the bottom of the pit, and under those circumstances, there's a lot of chulin on the bottom of the pit, and the truma that falls in is going to be mivutal, it's going to be nullified. So under those circumstances, both Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer agree that you're not allowed to intercept, and you must let the truma go to the bottom of the pit, and do not intercept, and be metame the truma biyadayim. Adkan, that took us to the end of the first parak. Second parak reintroduces us to the Isser Hana. The Mishnah says that at a time where it is usher to eat chametz, it's also usher to get benefit from it. And then the Mishnah gave us a number of examples of what Isser Hana looks like. Not feeding it to your animals, not selling it. The Mishnah then goes on to say that after the Zman, so now it's usher b'hana. And then the Mishnah introduced us to a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, how to properly dispose of your chametz. Can it only be done al yedei beer with a fire, that shitas Rabbi Yehuda? Or can it be destroyed and eliminated in any manner? That's the Shita of the Chachamim. Good. Those are the two parts of the Mishnah. The Gemara, the majority of the beginning of the parak opened up with a question of who is the author of our Mishnah, and then just simply diukim in terms of what the points of Mishnah were making in each phrase of the Mishnah. Ultimately, our Mishnah is being authored by Rabbi Gamliel. Proper pshat in the Mishnah is that at a time when the Kohanim are allowed to eat their Trumas Chametz, i.e. the fifth hour, so it's that during that fifth hour that you and I are allowed to get benefit from the Chametz. That is the Gemara's accepted pshat in our Mishnah. As far as why the Mishnah has to specifically say that during this fifth hour you can feed it to Chaya, Behema, and Ophos, why they need to mention all three, the Gemara dealt with that. Mocher l'nechri, you could sell it to a non-Jew, that's also a Dover Pashut. What's the Mishnah coming to teach us over there? The Gemara's answer is that to exclude ourselves from the position of Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai says, does not allow you to sell it immediately before Pesach. Then on the top of the Amud Beis, a quick introduction to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, who says that the Kuta Chabavli has to be sold 30 days prior to Pesach. Rashi says he's subscribing to the Shita of Beis Shammai. Then the Gemara went point by point through the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mutar Barana, what's the Chiddush over there? The Chiddush is that during the fifth hour, as long as it were to get scorched before it becomes Usr, then even after the Zman Isr, one's still allowed to get benefit from it because it is at this point in time, it is charred. If the time has passed, meaning as once you're in the sixth hour, it's Usr Barana, what's the Chiddush over there? Chiddush is that you cannot even be Mekadosh a woman with the chametz during the sixth hour, even though the Isra is only in Isra Darabanan, not in Isra Daraisa. You can't use the chametz when you're burning it to heat up an oven. The Gemara says, even according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, where the only way that you could destroy it is by burning it, one could make the argument that since that while I'm doing the mitzvah of biur, so then get a little bit of a side benefit. And the conclusion of the Gemara is, no, not, you can't do that even according to Rav Yehuda. And finally, we opened up the big discussion, which we're going to continue tomorrow, and that's going to be, how do I know that Chametz B'Pesach is Asr B'Ana? Where in the Torah does it say so? That it is Asr B'Ana? And the Gemara brings down a fundamental machlokas between Chizkiah and Rabbi Abau. Shitas Chizkiah is, only because the Torah by Chametz says, Lo Ye'achel, which is teaching us both the Isra Achila and the Isra Ana. Mashenken, according to Rabbi Abau, anytime the Torah introduces us to an Isra Achila, included in the Isra Achila is Isra Ana as well, unless the Torah goes out of its way to say otherwise. Tomorrow we'll open up with the example of Nevela, where the Torah went out of its way to say otherwise.